This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Ugh, you said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. List it in minutes with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope, but I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Michigan Wild Podcast.
We're just here walking around. We're gonna go set a tree stand. Don't worry, my dad's weird. He never shot a huge buck.
I just shot a freaking big buck.
Go get that one, Henry. Prayer.
Size of that deer.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. What a busy couple weeks it's been, but I find myself up early this morning in the office / studio, finally recording an intro to a podcast like this. I feel like it's been a while, but it's all good. It is all good. Up early. I'm going to get ready to take the boat out today. We are in the middle of a heat wave. Wow, I do not like 90-plus degree heat. Not a fan. I would prefer cool over hot, but, you know, doing the best of it. Got the bass boat all ready. you know, 86 bass boats getting taken out, and me, Ashley, Henry, and potentially my brother are going to go out this morning and maybe see what we can catch. You know, it doesn't matter if it's anything really. We don't keep nothing. We're just out having fun. So looking forward to that. But I do want to just kind of go through some quick current events. All my spring plots are done. I think I got a total of 5 acres out there, which is pretty cool. And, you know, my spring plots, I'm a little more limited where I can put those. Those are on properties that I can actually do some habitat stuff with. So those are done. In the fall, I'm sure I'll have a few. I don't know if I have, like, that much more acreage of plots, but I'll definitely have more spots. So all the ag is popping. I know what fields are going to be corn. I know what fields are going to be beans. I know what fields are going to be alfalfa. So that's kind of exciting. And I'm really looking forward to getting, like, inventory, right? Like, that's coming up. So I'm about to do swap over with show cams and get some different cell cams. Hopefully, I kind of feel like I'm pointing in the right direction. Thank you to everyone who has reached out. Let me know what's going on with that. But yeah, I'm close. I got one cam that I just remembered that I have sitting somewhere that I got to go sneak out and get. So that's the last cam, and then I'm going to do a complete overhaul, which is kind of exciting. Hopefully, it works great. All right, and then that's that for food plots. 3D League. I've been doing the traveling 3D League still. I think I just completed week 5. Yeah, week 5. It was great, man. Henry actually went with me. So we got him a, you know, one of those Hoyt kid bows for his birthday this spring, and kind of birthday Christmas kind of combined, you know, one of those things. It's kind of a bigger purchase, but we just said, "Hey, dude, we're getting you this." And he's been excited. He shot it kind of on his own. I have not been like pushing him to shoot it, just letting him kind of do his thing. And he wanted to go, and he didn't shoot all the targets, but he shot a handful of them and had a really good time. Shot some really good shots. It was kind of fun for him. And he shot the moose at like 22 yards, which he thought was pretty cool. He's just, you know, seeing dad do it. He wants to shoot pretty far. I'm like, "You're just not quite there yet, buddy. So don't feel bad if you don't hit exactly where you want to. You're just learning." But yeah, it was fun to walk around with him and have a little partner kind of. Shot some arrows, and man, I've been just waiting for this for a long time. So that was exciting to do that. And I almost shot my best score, I think. Yeah, I came really close. I know last year I shot some pretty good scores, but I was on the cusp of greatness, I guess, which this week, which just feels like is the best week I've shot. Week previous, I shot really good with a Kanani Zinger combo. I don't think I shot a single 8, which I don't know if I ever did that last year, but I definitely didn't shoot as many 11s as I had, you know, in some of those years. So I still had a really good score, broke 200. You know, now that I think about it, maybe I did shoot 1.8. I might have shot 1.8, but anyways, for some reason that week's not sticking out to me like this week is. This week I was just, you know, I was all over the 11 ring, which was, you know, I shoot some of them, but like I'm saying, like even if I missed 11, I was like, I bet if I would have shot an inch better, like overall, I would have shot almost all 11s. Like I was just hovering the 11 on the majority of them. A couple of them, you know, I just snuck in there, but on the 10. But I mean, for the most part, it felt like I was actually really shooting well. The ranges were this course is a little shorter, so it made it a little easier to, you know, shoot a little better. But I did sneak 2 8s in there, and one was a farther shot, and I totally pulled it. And then the other one was just a same thing. It was like I kind of did like 2 shots that I torqued the bow, knew I did it, and I shot to the side of it. So definitely something I can fix. Just got to, you know, kind of got mentally, you know, mentally weak there through it. But no, man, it's been fun shooting, doing that. It's getting better. I had to tweak with the bow just a little bit this week. My rest is a drop away rest, and I don't know if I hooked it on something or what I did, but I noticed my rest wasn't quite going down all the way, you know, the bow wasn't drawn. So I had to tighten that up a little bit, and I kind of noticed that, I think I maybe said something, I had a little bit of arrow flight, like, differences when I've been shooting it, but my arrows are still hitting where I wanted. Well, when I moved that rest, I was like, okay, I'm going to, like, fix this. I'm going to go, you know, kind of deep dive into it again. So shot some bear shafts through paper, you know, did my small adjustments, shot outside, and man, like I said, it was a direct reflection, you know, going into this week, shooting the 3D League, shot really, really well. So that was good. And then speaking of bows and shooting, I do have 2 bows I'm trying to sell. And I'm kind of going back and forth how I want to do this. But just figured I'm using this platform. And, you know, you go on bow sites on social media and there's so many scams and all that stuff. And I don't know if I really want to deal with selling these on just like a random site on Facebook. But I do have 2 bows for sale. So what happened is I ended up buying two prime RVXs. And then me and a buddy were going to do a little swapping for a bow for my wife. So he was going to keep one of them. I was going to get the other bow, try to get it set up for Ashley, just because she needs to upgrade something serious. And that bow just wasn't quite right for her. It didn't quite work. So the swap didn't happen, or it happened, and it went back to the other way. So now I'm with two bows. And then the reason why, and I was shooting the prime RVX 36 really well. That was going to be my foam bow. I talked all about how I had it all set up, and I did do that. And then I just ended up getting my older Black 5 back, my prime Black 5 bow. I got that back. So I had sold that to a buddy, and he got a new bow. So he's like, I don't want this anymore. He wanted it. I'm like, yeah, I love shooting that bow. That would be a great backup bow. So I no longer need these two other bows. So I have the Black 5 is about all set up. I just am waiting on the sight for it. But so now I find myself with these two bows. So essentially I have a prime RVX 34 and a prime RVX 36. The 34 is gray with all the limbs. I should go look over there and grab it. But it's like the gray riser. And then the 36 is all black. So if you are interested in any of those bows, hit me up on, send me an email, reach out to me on Facebook or Instagram. I am going to sell them pretty cheap. Essentially, I got them a decent deal on them when I bought them. And the 34 is, there's nothing wrong with that. It's got a couple little blemishes on it when we first bought it. These bows have sat in archery shop for a little bit. No one had purchased them, but you could tell they've been shot or they've been moving around a little bit. So there's a couple little dings here and there. It had a rest on it. You can see where the set screw for the rest, was, dug into the riser a little bit. And then the 36, I had a cable, actually one of the cables that goes to the cam, the serving is starting to fray on it. So that's what I'm saying. It's going to be cheap. Like, you probably need a string on the 36, and the 34 has got a couple of dings in it. So if you're interested in any of those bows, want to see some more pictures, reach out to me, anyone you know. All I can say is that when I started shooting that 36, like, it is super, super easy to pull back. Like, it's a smooth draw all the way back. I mean, it's a taller bow, but because of the center grip with those primes, even though it's a taller bow, it doesn't shoot like it's super tall. So if you want a hunting bow, or you're new to archery, or you know someone that's new, like, these bows, especially the 36, is like a super easy pullback on the bow. Do need your own mods. Like, the 36 has got a 30.5-inch draw, and I want to say the 34 is either a 29.5 or a 30, and they're both 70-pound bows. So if you do got to get new mods, I traded a guy online for my mod. Otherwise, they're like $30 to get the correct draw length. So if you're interested in that, reach out to me. I'm trying to move them. Good deal. Like, these are going to, like, I'm not trying to make any money on these things. I'm just trying to move them, to allocate that money for something different. So hit me up if you're interested in that. All right. This week's episode is with Aaron Blasey from The Fall. Me and Aaron have become pretty good friends over the last, 2 years. We find ourselves talking all the time. Not all the time, but I say once every other week, maybe once a week we'll talk. We both got to drive quite a ways for work currently. He does, one day a week. find ourselves driving, and finally I was like, dude, we talked in the morning, and I was like, hey, what time are you heading home? He's like, I'm heading home about this time. I'm like, hey, me too. You want to just do a podcast on the way home? So we did that. I got the stuff I've been using, the mobile, I guess, podcast equipment's always in the truck to try to take advantage of, some seat time and get a podcast out, which I've done those sporadically through this spring/early summer. And we got it. We did it. It was a little weird because I think we both were driving in trucks and stuff. But I think I got it to work. And I haven't quite listened to the audio all the way yet. I got to start editing that. But there is a couple times where Aaron lost service or I lost service. So please bear with me. I'll try my best to, splice together. But overall, it was a great conversation. It was kind of one of those conversations where we both got done with it. It's like, I kind of forgot we were recording a podcast. We were just, BSing, just talking like two buddies do. And we went through, like, spring food plots, because we both are partnered with Vitalized Seeds, so we talked about that a little bit. Went through kind of, like, where we're at right now, what's the outlook looking like for the summer. Does Aaron have any deer he's looking forward to seeing this fall? He's going to Iowa, so we touch on that just briefly. We do get into some ground hunting, because he's stocked up on some deer the last couple of years and been super successful doing that, which I'm all about, like, learning more. I mean, I shot my buck on in Kansas on the ground last year. I have, you know, tried to capitalize on deer on the ground more than once. And, you know, he's found some really good success. We talk about that. Talk about a couple other things. Just like I said, a good overall conversation. Really enjoyed it with Aaron. And just bear with the audio a little bit. It should be all right. It's pretty funny. Like, I should be able to hook a phone up to this podcast Zoom thing and just go through that. And it was, like, glitching out. It would kind of work, kind of wouldn't work. We had it for a second, and then I ended up just, you know, completely bypassing that and running just speakerphone right up against my mic. So both of us were through the same mic. But, yeah, I think it sounded good in my ears when I was listening to it. So hopefully this comes through decent on this episode. All right, we're going to move on to partners. DH3 is going to start off here. Just got, oh, man, I'm trying to think where I'm at with my headspace. I just started looking at some other properties. Like I said, I drove by and figured out crop rotation. So that's pretty important to understand what that's going to be just to try to get summer inventory. So the one property, which was, you know, beans before, is now corn. So that is going to kind of bode pretty well for, like, hunting, maybe more so than beans do. But, like, when it was beans, you know, like, every deer in the section was, like, in those beans throughout the summer. So I had a really good idea of what deer made it. So I'm going to, you know, kind of change my trail cam strategy up just a little bit for that property. And I have another property that has never been beans since I've been hunting it that is beans now. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what kind of pull I can get, because that is a weird property. That property, when I first started hunting it, it had, like, every big deer in the area would move through it. And then had some pressure issues, and some neighbors started hunting, and their access was kind of goofy, and the deer didn't really tolerate that. I've seen that, because I would leave, like, trail cameras up 24/7 on this property, and I just could witness it firsthand. But it's also it's a good property. Like, I still hunt it. I had a decent encounter last year on there. There was a deer that I kind of had history with he was kind of popping in and out in October. So it's still very, like, on the radar for a good property. But being beans, I'm really hoping I can capitalize, like, early in October on this property, which I think is possible. So I'm actually going to allocate a little bit more resources towards that property to try to take advantage of an early October, because the farmer who leases it, they're not a full-time farmer. They're, like, they do farm quite a bit, but, like, they have other jobs and they, you know, they're busy. So sometimes they're a little later to the party with harvest or anything like that. So I'm kind of opportunistic that these beans got planted a little later than, like, what I think everyone else planted. So I'm hoping they stay green. And another thing I'm thinking about is the way this woodlot, kind of like the timber that meets the ag, is laid out. There's an inside corner, which I have a stand, which I always smash early season does in. It's really shady. Like, it's hard to grow corn right there. It's kind of, you know, the vitalized carbon load grew, but it didn't grow as well as some of the other spots because it's so shaded out. It grew, don't get me wrong, but, like, there's just a lot of shade right there. So I'm really hoping that the beans will stay green a little longer right there. And it's probably probably end up being, like, almost like an acre and a half or 2 acres of shade out. So if those beans stay green and October 1st rolls around, I know right where I'm sliding into. So I'm already strategizing for that. And that all dictates, like, where my mock scrapes are going to be. So trail cam locations, like, all those, you know, the field edge cams and the beans, I will try to have them on a mock scrape. Because I've had locations, I have mock scrapes already there, or existing scrapes I've added to. So that's where I'm at. So in DH3 is what I spray in all my scrapes. It's something I've had great success with over the last couple of years. And I think if you guys are interested in mock scrapes or want to get into it, why not support it? Especially if you're in Michigan, support a local Michigan guy, and make sure you're looking out for DH3. Vitalized C, like I've been talking about a lot last couple weeks, that's, you know, that stuff has worked great for me. The spring food plot season's done for me. Carbon load, I'm just waiting for that. So if anyone would like some nitro boost right now, I got some still from this spring. I will sell it at a discounted rate. So let me know if you want that. I think you can still plant it. I mean, I've talked to Jared. Essentially, it just won't get as long. But if you want to, like, if you got something going on, rain's coming, you can throw that out there. And it still is a soil builder, and deer still eat the stuff. So, I mean, you can do that, and then a few, you know, months later, a month or two later, throw the carbon load in with that too, and kind of do a trifecta or double down on it. I mean, that's a solid option too. So if you want some nitro boost, you can reach out to me. Also, if you want carbon load, thank you to the guys who have already reached out to me and want to get some of that. I just let me know what you want so I can make sure I order enough the first go around so you can get it quicker. So that's carbon load. Like I said before, I'm a dealer. So hit me up if you're interested anywhere in the greater Grand Rapids area, or even if you want to meet me. If you're a little farther away from Grand Rapids, dude, the whole west side of the state, I'm pretty much going up and down it. I mean, that's where a lot of my work is. So we can make something happen with that. So, and I've said before, like we get the dealer rates are cheaper than what you can get online. I think online is a great deal. If you find yourself needing it, don't have time to meet, whatever, order it online. Shipping's quick, but we do have the ability to, you know, sell a little cheaper online as a dealer than online. So support your dealers. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing that they're doing, and we're trying to get vitalized in as many people's hands as possible. All right, and then Wildlife Legends Taxidermy. I mean, there's nothing much to say. If you want taxidermy work done, don't have a connection, don't know where to go, find yourself in a position where you're like, man, I have this turkey I shot this spring and I think I want to mount, but I got no idea where I want to bring it, check out Wildlife Legends Taxidermy. Same goes for whitetail mounts, man. I've had whitetail mounts in my freezer for a long time, just waiting, saving up the money, doing those kind of things. And that's all right. You can still bring it in and drop it off at Wildlife Legends Taxidermy. There's so many options. They'll walk you through anything that you need, walk you through all the options for, you know, mount positions and all that good stuff. So, all right, that's it for partners. I appreciate everyone listening to this. Please go shoot your bow. Start, you know, it's busy right now, but start the process. I'm always encouraging guys to fling a couple arrows here and there. Not that you need to be, you know, possessed about it or anything like that, but just fling an arrow here and there, shoot your bow. Maybe if something feels wrong, take the time to, you know, shoot it and, you know, shoot it through paper, bring it to your local, your local pro shop, when they're not slammed in September or early October, and figure out what's going on. My brother-in-law, he started shooting his bow, easing into it, and he's like, man, dude, I feel like something just a little off. And I was like, hey, I'll take it over here to the house. I took it over and started, you know, zipping it through paper, and sure enough, something was weird. It could be cable stretch, it could be string wearing out, it could be a lot of different things. I don't know what happens to bows. It could just be from it just sitting and gets bumped, you didn't know it, or it drops, or you hook it on something. I don't know what happens, but sometimes bows just need a little love, and it's better to do it now, get it shooting good, and you can practice with it in the right way all summer, and lean up in the fall, you're super confident. So that's my little PSA for shooting your bow. I love it. It's therapeutic. It's easy to do now because it's light early, it's late. You can sneak out and zip a couple arrows and just start building that foundation for the fall. All right, guys, that's it. You know what to do this week. Get out there and enjoy it, and catch you guys next week. Welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. My guest and myself are both heading home from work, and we both find ourselves having decent drives every week. And it seems like on Thursdays we talk on the phone anyways. So this week I was like, hey, let's record a podcast. And I got Aaron from the fall. What's going on, dude?
1:31, heading home. Good day. Had a good day in the studio doing some product shoots. And there's no reason why we just... quite a bit on the phone, like you said, on Thursdays. No reason why we just don't hit record on it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. And we always talk about current events, what we're doing, what we're thinking, you know, all that good stuff. And I know the last couple of weeks we kind of talked about food plots, and you got all your spring plots in, and you did some vitalized seed stuff this year, didn't you?
I did. Everything I put in was vitalized this year. I put in, three clover plots. I put in just shy of 2 acres of nitro boost, and then I put in I put another plot in as well that was the clover plus, like the chicory stuff like that. So I'm pumped about it, and got a lot of rain last night. We got an inch and a half of rain yesterday and last night. It needed it bad. It was dry, needed it to, it's everything's kind of out of the ground, but it's like needs that little boost of rain to kind of get it going, you know?
Oh, absolutely, dude. I got 10 acres total of nitro boost in the ground, and I got the last five done yesterday. I like looked at the radar and was like, oh my gosh, rain's coming. Move some things around. Me and Henry went out there and we broadcasted and then color packed, and I parked the tractor in my dad's barn as it started pouring. So I was like, whoo, got that one in right at the last minute. That was pretty fun. So when you do nitro boost during the seeding, how do you feel about that packet of black stuff that you put on the coating on the seeds?
Basically, all it is graphite that I know of, and it gets absolutely everywhere. It's all over your body. It's all it's like a lubricant. So the reason why I know that is because my brother-in-law is a cash crop farmer, and I help him. I usually bring a lot of the seed to him in the field and help him, load the planter, whether it be corn or beans. And he does the same thing with the graphite. And usually if he's, loading any of the hoppers or whatever, I go through behind him with the graphite. That's kind of what I call it, I guess. But and put it on the beans, and then it just kind of lubricates it all. But, man, it is a mess.
Dude, I know. It's always like you try to be so careful. Like whatever you do, don't wear good clothes or a good hat.
No,
because
you can't
it
wear
is
good
everywhere.
Clothes.
Everywhere. It's not, you got like black boogers for a day or two. You go take a shower at the end of the day and it's just black. It's like, dude, this stuff's everywhere.
Yeah, for sure. I actually could not tell you what it helps. But I do know that it's good for the seeds and everything like that. So I just do it.
Yeah, dude, I think me and you kind of fall under the same boat for our food plot strategy. Like, we've been around farming, like, people in our family have done it or close friends, but us ourselves have not really, like, mastered the whole technique of it. We just are good at following directions and, finding good spots to put it.
Yeah, and, I really don't want to master it. I just want to, just do enough just to get by and have a good plot. Grow a good, something out of the ground and be good with that. I don't need to be the master at anything like that.
Yeah, and I think I'm the same way. Like, I don't mind, being good at, I guess, prep. I don't know. Like, I don't want to master it because I just want to master, location and, architecture of it. Like, I don't really care what the ground's doing. I don't really care that, this blend works better with this stuff. I don't care about seed rates and all that stuff. Just give me a package, tell me how far it goes, and I'll turn the dirt or do whatever I got to do, the 1-2 system, and I'll focus on planting it before rain and putting it in a good spot where I can capitalize on deer movement or killing deer in it.
Well, and honestly, that's a good reason why we lean on Al and Jared, because they're the scientists behind that stuff. And, if it's like seed rates or anything like that, it's like Jared's a quick phone call away. Hey, what's seed depth and rate on this? And he's like, yeah, this and this. And I'm like, perfect, getting in the ground right now.
Yeah, and we will totally take advantage of their, knowledge and all that. And just, you kind of default to the pros sometimes. And all you got to do is listen to both of them talk, especially Al. And it's like, yeah, they have invested way more time than I ever want to into this. And I am going to trust them. And, the results speak for themselves. I've had great luck with it. Lots of people across the, the Midwest and different soil types and all that stuff works really good. So we'll kind of get this off of a vitalized plug. I'm sure they'll enjoy that. But I did want to talk a little bit about bucks because, dude, it's starting to show. I got a nice buck that I got a picture sent to me that's got big beams, brows, and you can kind of tell what he's going to be. We talked this morning and you saw a nice buck while driving on the road. Dude, velvet season is right around the corner.
Sound any better?
Yeah, I just got you on speakerphone and I'm holding you up to my mic. So we'll just do that. It's got to be something trippy with the connection through my phone for some reason today. So
I don't know. Well, do you want me to just kick off where I was at?
Yeah, about velvet season. That's where I, that's the last time I heard you. I didn't hear anything after that. So velvet season is around the corner.
This morning I was talking to you about, or just chatting with you when I was going down 46, and I looked over and there was four deer, and they're 150 yards off the road, and I could see antlers on one already, a frame. I'm like, holy crap, good sized deer. I have no cameras out right now. I'm trying to actually push myself until August until I'm gonna get cameras out. Usually it's July 4th, but I'm trying to push it back another month. We'll see. I might get a soaker out, but I don't know. I'm just waiting. I've got I got a buddy sent me a picture. He's got a heck of a deer right now. I'm talking, this deer is probably, boy, I would have to say he's probably 70 inches right now already.
Oh, dang.
Yeah, like he's got beams. He's got like 8-inch brows already. Like, ooh, it's wild how big this deer is already.
Yeah, we like those. We like those this time of year when you get something like that. So what's the reason for maybe holding off on your cams? Is it a battery thing? Is it a want to not intrude? Is it wait till crops get tall enough to get in there? What's your mindset waiting till August?
So honestly, it's a couple things. Batteries and just expense with the cell cams. Like, I've got no, like, I run quite a few Reconyxes as well. I don't have any cell cams that are Reconyxes, but I do have, I've got like 4 or 5 soaker cams that are Reconyxes, and they're great. Reconyx is an unbelievable camera, and it has been for a very long time, and they are great with battery. But when you start flipping on the cell cams, then your monthly bill is just like getting ridiculous, and I'm just trying to hold off on at least the cell cams until August.
Yeah, that's kind of what I've always done. I might have like a camera or two, like cell camera eyes, that like stays out all year because it's like on a field edge maybe, or just like a really good spot I don't want to ever like go into. But then the majority of my cams get pulled, and then I don't ever put them out until like I go back and do like, if it's a property I do fall food plots in, that's when I kind of like do the fall plot, and then either the day after or same day or that same week is when I deploy all my cell cams. Because like you said, like, dude, it gets expensive. Like, batteries are, you know, are an expense, and then the subscription plans, like, dude, them things add up quick. And especially when it seems like you add a cam or two here and there every year, the next thing you know, it's like, whew, we're getting pretty pricey every month.
You know, I did kind of actually just lie to you. I did just send 4 cameras out to my buddy Chad in Iowa. He's gonna, it's nice having a guy that can be able to put stuff out for you so you don't have to make, you know, one less trip maybe, but like, he's gonna have those out here within the next couple weeks and starting to get an inventory on Iowa since I drew that. So that's gonna be nice, but like, that, other than that, like, I'm going to try to wait for my cells as long as I possibly can.
Dude, Iowa's like a fairy tale, so I don't really know how much I want to talk about that because most of us can't relate to that.
Oh, no.
Now, since we're on whitetails, like, the first thing I want to ask you is, do you have any deer that are, like, I guess, did you get either, like, sighting or trail cam pics of any bucks after season that you're, like, sitting back here just like, ooh, I can't wait to get a picture of this deer this year?
There's a couple. There's I gotta think back, but there's one that nicknamed him Hawk. One of my friends is nicknamed Hawk, and he always wanted me to name a deer after him, so it's just Hawk. He's an 8. He was probably 105, 110 inch 8 last year. Had quite a bit of pictures of him. I may have seen him one time on the hoof, kind of unconfirmed, but it resembled him off in the distance. I really hope he kind of makes a good jump. He will be, if not 3, he will be 4 this year, so he's in that frame, and I'm hoping he's going to be right at Pope and Young, or, you know, somewhere around there. Another one is, his name's Limp Biscuit. There's a deer that he must have got shot or something in rifle, but after season he was hanging out, and he's got a heck of a limp on him, and I'll be interested to see what that deer looks like. Those two right off the rip are like two that I'm pretty interested in. Other than that, right offhand right now, I know there's a couple more, but nothing made it through that that I can remember that I was gonna shoot last year that I know of. Like, anything that was on the hit list that I felt like I was gonna try to get after, nothing to my knowledge has made it through. So
fortunately, you got one of them, so it's not like you rolled over and didn't get any and everyone shot him. You at least got to partake in some of that fun and shot that buck last year. So, like, when do you, I'm trying to think of the right word for this, when will you get like all consumed on a deer, like, or deer? Is this like something that slowly builds through the summer and like September 15th is knocking on the door and you're like, oh my gosh, like I am fully invested. I am strategizing. I am planning. Because you've been really taking advantage of like the first couple days of October. If you go back the last handful of years, you've had some awesome encounters and kills in the first week or 10 days of October.
Yeah, so for me, it's more of like I pull a for me, and it's like, you know, if I have, let's just say, four or five deer to chase, they're more likely going to be on different farms. And when one really starts to consume me is if it is like when I have more history. Like, let's say deer number one, I have more history with him. You know, it could be glassing history, or it could be, you know, when I get really emotionally attached to something, or to a deer, is like when I get really invested. Now, it could come up to September 25th and I'm like, none of these deer have really shown themselves, or I really don't feel like I'm in the game with any of them. Until I get that one instance that like really emotionally attaches me to them, whether it might be seeing them from glass or from the tree or daylight photos, is when I kind of like really start getting invested in them, I guess. And you know, it's kind of whatever one is like, it's like a race. Whatever one like really starts, you know, showing me chinks of his armor is when I really start getting invested.
Yeah. So you invest in high opportunity. So like, you're not like, you're going to invest time or consume yourself with like figuring out a deer that you feel is very like killable.
Correct. Yeah, that's where I'm at with it. And I was actually talking to Aaron Olson yesterday from Next Step Outdoors, and we were talking about, you know, like the numbers game or chasing one buck. And like at heart, like I want to devote like my whole season to one deer. And eventually I'll do it, but like it is hard for me to like get into that mindset, because normally, and this is not a brag or nothing, but normally I have five or six bucks to chase on different farms. So it's like at that time I play like the, you know, just the numbers game. Like who's showing me more? Like who is more killable right now? And that's who I'm going to go after. So it's like, I really hate to be like, I'm going to pick out Big Jim this year, and then he's just a ghost. You know what I mean? And then you're kind of like reneging on what you said.
Well, and I think that's like a really relatable topic, because the reason why you probably can't do that is you just said earlier, like of all the deer you targeted last year, not a single one made it to next year because you shot one or your neighbor shot the other ones. So it's yep. really hard to like say, hey, I'll devote myself to this, you know, this buck that may be special, or pass a deer that you could potentially be special, because the turnover, it just isn't there yet. I mean, granted, you're getting to the point where you're shooting, you know, 3 and 4 year old deer, which is pretty cool, because it used to be 2.5. So I mean, it's happening. You're just not quite there. You and the neighbors and everyone aren't quite to that point where it's like, hey, we're all passing 3.5 year old bucks. Like, it's just not there yet.
Yeah, for sure. You know, as we were talking about this, talking about emotional attachment, I do actually have an emotional attachment to a deer now. I call him the barn buck now, because I found his shed. My dog and I found his shed. Now, if anybody knows me, I'm not like, I love to shed hunt and I do it every year, but I don't find a lot of sheds. So when I find a shed, it's kind of a big deal. Mm. And I found one this last season on a farm that I'm really excited about. And called him the barn buck, found a shed like right next to a barn, and I think he was 2 last year. The kicker is we're gonna see what he looks like this year, because when I was going back and looked through photos, I got him like, he's got like a really good side, and then the other side is like one big spike. Mm. So I don't know if he's gonna like kind of grow out of that or not, but I found the better side, like the 8-point. He was a 4-point side, but if he had both sides, he'd be a decent 8. So, like, I have an emotional attachment to that deer now. So if that deer pops up on camera this year and he's, like, an eligible bachelor as far as, like, he's one I want to chase, he will probably slip into that number one hole for the season, you know. But I will play a numbers game after that, though.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, so that... thinking, I don't know why, if the barn buck shed made me think of this or not, but you're kind of a guy that you've hunted a lot of these spots, you've got a lot of history in these areas, you've had tons of success, but you're still like hustling trying to find new properties to get permission on. And you recently got a new property, correct?
So I try to knock on a few doors a year, and I really don't talk much about that, because I feel it might be selfish for me, but I feel like I have a system that nothing that like nobody else is doing, but in my area I'm starting to get like a lot more pressure around me, and I can sense that. And me immediately is going to like, God, I'm just like saying too much to everybody. Yes. You know what I mean? Yeah. So it's like, I do try to get permission on a few farms a year, mostly no's. Last year was a good year. I got three new farms that I got permission on, and still have them, and they're long-term like permission pieces. Like, they're family friends that I kind of grew up with their, you know, maybe grew up with their kids or something like that. Yep. And like, you know, one was kind of a long play. It took me like 3 years. Like, I kind of planted that seed like 3 or 4 years ago. They had somebody hunting it. They're like, eh, if we don't have anybody else hunt it, we'll give you a call. I'm like, okay, you know, sounds great. Well, 3 years went by, and like, I got a call, and I'm like, oh my God, they remembered. So like, you know, so I am trying to like broaden the portfolio a little bit, and because a lot of stuff, which you've seen some of the stuff that I hunt, it's so small.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm the guy that like likes the diamond in the roughs, and I will try to, you know, I like the diamond in the roughs, and I really try to hone in on the windows in those pieces. And if I get it, my philosophy is, if I get enough pieces and the windows are offset enough during the season, then I've got enough places I can go throughout the whole season and be in the game throughout the whole year. That's what my philosophy.
Dude, I'm in the same boat. Like, that is exactly what I try to do. It's like, I might hone in on a specific area because maybe I have a permission that's like a good permission, and then it's like, all right, now I gotta do my due diligence and make sure like there's not another piece close by that I can, you know, gain access to. Because when you're hunting small properties, sometimes you need two or three spots in that section to like be able to effectively hunt a deer or a group of deer, and you never know which one's good. So like, I've been doing that for the few years. I kind of got my like spots, but like because of EHD, I'm really like debating on how I'm going to handle this fall. I think I may have a deer, like the one I kind of alluded to earlier. I think I'm pretty sure I know that deer, so like I can invest some time there, but he may be the only one. And I understand the odds, like you were talking about earlier, like if you only got one option for the entire year with the amount of hunting pressure that we have around, I mean, that's a really slim pickings. Like, maybe you can get lucky and make it happen, but also I got some neighbors that are good hunters too. So I'm like, okay, where can I like zoom out a little bit and try to target other areas? Like, well, I have a permission piece over here. Do I maybe need to put some attention towards that? And I feel like I'm getting really close to this point in the summer where I can actually like make a good game plan, because all the crops are starting to pop. So like, you can kind of like see what's where the beans are, where the corn is, and then see if, you know, anything happened. And yeah, I got a couple doors I got to knock on too.
That, man, I like that a lot. And that's, you nailed it with the crop rotation. Like, I'm very giddy about two spots this year. Three spots, I'm sorry. But one that I've actually had a lot of success in when the crop rotation is what I have right now. And I'm trying not to get too excited, because it's almost one of those things that's happened. Like, I've been able to kill a couple times in this area on this rotation. So now it's like in my head, I'm like, okay, doesn't happen like that all the time. But it's hard not to get excited about it because the stars are aligning. And all it's going to take is a deer using this early season. I'm talking the first 3 days of October. If a deer is using this in the first 3 days of October, I don't want to call my shot, but it is, I'm going to be in a very, very good situation.
Dude, be confident. I love it. Even if you call your shot, it doesn't work out, at least you go into it knowing you're going to kill. And like, if you don't have that thought process when you slide in somewhere, like that's, you shouldn't be there. You know?
Yeah.
All right. Yep. So I got a scenario for you. As we're talking about bucks and all this stuff, you can tell I'm itching for the fall already, even though it's June. But you're in Iowa. You drew Iowa. If anyone doesn't know, Aaron's going to Iowa. If you listen to the fall podcast, it's all we get to hear about. Well, I'm just kidding. But you're in a stand and you catch a buck with a doe. Let's say he's you know, well without, you know, well out of range, as in, like, there's no use in rattling at him, there's no use in calling at him. Are you getting your butt out of the tree to go put a stalk on this deer if he's with a doe?
150,000% yes.
Okay, and is that because yeah. you've been so, like, you've had some, like, really good success doing that in Michigan?
Yeah, my three biggest bucks in Michigan, well, no, I take that back. Two of my ground stalks.
Yeah.
And the third one was last year, and that was like an impromptu, like, he's with the doe, same kind of thing. Like, I'm gonna make that happen. If I and honestly, I will if I'm sitting in the tree and I'm like, man, there's just no way, I'm still more than likely gonna try to figure out something. And last year I did two stalks on the deer that I killed,
yeah.
Two different days. And, you know, because the other thing is like that first stalk that I had on him, you know, he was with a doe and he had a satellite buck, and he was just over a rise in a cut cornfield, and it went satellite buck, him, the doe, me. Okay. And I got the wind right, and I only could get to a so far. Like, I only could get to a point where it was just over, like, I could see the satellite buck, but it was kind of like hunting out west where there's, like, a hill, mm. and, you know, the bucks are, like, you see those mule deer that are just over a hill or something like that.
Yep.
Well, when I started revealing myself to that satellite buck, I'm like, this is as far as I can go. And I brought my grunt tube, and I snort wheezed that buck in. So that is, like, an option of, like, I'm in full confidence. Now, if you would have said this to me probably 5-6 years ago, I probably have been really hesitant. But, like, now that I have the confidence in, like, doing it, and I think being an adaptive hunter to any situation you can, it comes about, is the best type. And that's what I try to strive to be, is, like, in any situation, how am I going to do this? Like, if a curveball gets thrown when I'm sitting dead red heater, how am I going to adapt and hit this thing with two strikes down in the count, kind of thing? Like, that's the mindset I have with it.
Yeah, dude. And I like the proof's in the pudding, right? And, like, you've shot some great bucks doing it, but, like, how the heck are you getting, like, how? Like, I guess, like, for me, I did a lot of ground hunting in Kansas last year, and if I would have sealed the deal on the deer at one deer I sent an arrow at, he would have been my biggest buck ever with a bow, probably biggest buck ever. And then the second deer I got, I was like 65 yards from, and it just couldn't quite get close enough, and that would have for sure been right up there too with, like, one of my biggest bucks with a bow. And I kind of, like, they were in two polar opposite, you know, situations. But how are you in Agfield in Michigan, which you can, like, you always say the thing, you can stand on a beer can and see your dog run away for 2 days. How the heck yep. are you getting within bow range of these deer? I guess for my, like, my perspective is, how do they not see you is one question, and then how are you not getting picked off and able to draw your bow back?
So the four different stalks that I've had in recent history, or recent, you know, recent time, have been totally different. One was a standing bean field, and the buck was in a standing bean field, and I used a hedgerow or a fence row to cut 3/4 of the distance down. And then when I had to get into the bean field with him, it was a belly crawl to 25 yards. But I will say one thing, and I might lose you here in a minute because I'm going to go in a bad spot, so if I do, we'll get back on this. But one thing that I don't know how I've had the success with stalking like I have is because the biggest thing, in my opinion, with stalking a whitetail is to have good patience. And I have terrible patience in life. Like, I have no patience in life. And, like, that is rule number one. You have to have patience. You can't get too rammy. You have to, like, you almost have to let things unfold. Mm. And you have to be okay with if they don't unfold and you're like, and how you want them, that you got to be okay with it. Like, mm. that's the approach I have. So, patience is number one. And then, I don't know, it's just, you know, there's a lot of things, like, legs are getting tired, it's muddy, and you're like, when it was green, but now it's brown, and it's like, because it's just like, how bad do you want the opportunity, I guess. And it's just patience is key number one, and then trying to get the wind right. You know, the wind is huge in that. And with those, so their minds have been other places.
All right, you're breaking up just a little bit.
We'll give it a couple minutes.
Yep, I got you.
Yeah,
I think you're through that spot. You're getting there. I'm catching every other word.
Yeah,
ooh, you sound good now. Man, those rule.
This is gonna be rural Michigan roads. This is gonna be a great podcast for you.
Oh, we'll splice it in. We're talking about bucks. Yeah, I got you now.
I'm getting ready to go by Amble Bar. If anybody's in the greater central Michigan area, the Amble Bar on 46, good little watering hole for you.
Yeah, that's a good. I heard they got good food there.
Good food, good bar food, and good oat sodas, if you will.
Nice. So from what I kind of gathered, you know, patience is number one. And then when you talk about the buck in the bean field, you use cover like a hedgerow to sneak in there. How much cover do you, I guess what I learned in Kansas was, I don't need as much cover as I thought I needed to sneak up on deer.
That's one thing that I've realized as well. And, you know, that deer was on October 21st, I believe. The other two were in November. One was November 9th and one was November 2nd. So they were heavily mindset was on does. But like in that, when they're thinking other places, like you don't have to have as good a coverage, you would think. But like if it's a buck bedded by himself, like that is very tricky. Very, very hard. And getting in that tight, and honestly, that got to the point where I didn't know how far he was away. I figured I was within 25 yards, and I figured that because all I could see were the tip of his tines in a bean field, and I was counting the bean rows. Like I knew how far, or I could guesstimate how far the beans were planted apart in the rows, and then I was trying to count over rows to get to him. And then when he stood up, he was at 18, so I was like a little closer than I thought.
Oh my gosh, talk about like a nerve-wracking moment. Like, dude, yes. He's right here, I think he's this far, but I'm just trying to like hey, but you made it happen on a beautiful deer. That deer was sweet.
Yeah, he was a great deer.
So that's cool. I mean, that's fun to know that you're like you're that confident, not because like you're awesome or amazing or you're the best ground, you know, stalker in the game, but just that you've had success. So that's another tool you can have in your bag, especially when you're going on a hunt that takes, you know, 5 or 6 years to go on. You got me?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, so what I was saying, like having that confidence, you know, going to Iowa where you've, you know, waited 5 years to hunt, is really nice having that to be able to have like another tool in the toolbox.
Yeah, I will say though, like, if I feel like, in that, going back to that situation in Iowa, if I feel like I'm going to, like, blow up the farm or really do more harm than good, like, getting after this deer. Now, if it's a special deer and it's like, I've been after this deer for a couple of days and I've got history with them, no doubt I'm more than likely going to try it. But if it's something maybe earlier in the hunt, and if I feel like I'm going to blow up the whole farm and just do more harm than good, I'm probably going to punt and probably just, like, you know, live to fight another day and probably maybe just, you know, not do it, I guess I would say.
Okay. Yeah, like you're going to be educated still. It's not like,
yeah,
you,
I don't want to
like
educate
gotta, like,
every deer on the farm either,
yes.
You know?
Yes, that makes sense. I mean, I just think it'd be pretty cool if you go there and do that. Like November 7th, you know, 10:30 in the morning, you catch a buck with a doe, nudge during this like little cut or this terrace or something. And it's like, oh, game on. Like, I got this.
You about just said that the same day and time that I killed the Hambino was November 7th, but at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, dang. Let's repeat this, boys. Let's do this.
The red moon is if anybody's a moon person this year, the red moon is lining up very well for November, in my opinion. So hold on to your hats for that All you moon guys out there.
It's going to be a good November, hopefully.
Yeah.
Real good. Yep. So, since we're talking about all this ground stock, and it got me thinking, like, okay, obviously this year, you know, Iowa and Michigan are probably the two states you're going to hunt. I don't know if you're going to be able to sneak a third in there. Maybe. I don't know. But I don't know if you're planning on it. But, like, let's say next year, is a prairie state on the radar since you like this ground game?
100%. Yeah, it's very much on the, you know, and when I went to Kansas in 23, like, I had great intentions to be able to try to, like, find a deer from the vehicle or glassing and going after them. But I will say that went quickly out the window when we were glassing, you know, in the mornings and stuff like that, or in the evenings, or my buddies were, and we just weren't seeing the deer out with the does. Like, we were there way too early. I honestly don't even, I don't even know if I'd call them on lockdown. I would say that the hot, you know, I thought it was to the part where, or to the point where it was like October 22nd, 20th to the 25th in Michigan. That's what I'd put it at, where the biggest deer probably has the first hot doe and he's locked down with her, and all the other bucks are like really not getting going yet, and all, there hasn't been a lot of does popped. That was the scenario I had in Kansas that year. So that kind of can get tough, you know, when you're doing some stalking in those states. And honestly, where we were at in Kansas, you can get that done, but it's very pockety. I was hunting where there was a lot of timber as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to, like, you have to time, there's a lot of timing that's got to be right to do that consistently. And
yeah.
And you've found success in it because you're in an area where you can use the glass a lot. So you're spotting these deer from distance, or you're, you know, every day checking. And, oh man, this is our question. So how long do you feel like a buck is with a doe? Like, if you catch a buck locked down with a doe, are you like, the clock is ticking? Like, how much time do you feel like you have?
So this might go against everything that like a biologist says or anything like that, but like, I have two instances where I've actually visually seen a buck locked down with a doe in the same spot for roughly anywhere from 38 to 48 hours.
Okay.
And that was two instances in Michigan in the last 5 years. So if you were to ask me, that's like the window I'd put on it. Like, if in those two instances, I felt like I probably caught those deer within, like, pretty quick of them being there together. Like, I don't know, you know, it's hard. Like, I didn't see them, like, come from two fields away and join up, like, hey, this is where we're going to, you know, I didn't see that. But the one instance was, I was actually not going to hunt that night, and I remember my wife was working, and I had my daughter that night, and we were going to get pizza for dinner. And I was going to take a loop around the section just to glass. And this is at, like, prime time. Like, this is when you should be in a tree. And there's two deer out in this bean field. And I'm like, oh, I know what that is. You know, when you get to that point, you're like, in the season, you know what that is. And I got the glass out, and I'm like, oh, boy. And I knew what buck it was and everything. So I watched him. I went and got pizza. Came back right before dark. They had not moved. That next morning, I got into a tree as close as I could to them. As it got daylight, they had not moved, okay? So you're looking at, what, 10, 12 hours or so there?
Yeah.
I sat all day in that tree, and I watched him breed her four times. They never moved a 20-foot circle in the bean field all day, daylight to dark. And then the next morning I got up, and I couldn't hunt that next morning to glass, and they were in the next field over, still together. They did move a little bit, and then I just lost track of them. So that was an instance where it was like quite a bit of time, you know, 30 hours or more or something like that. So I really don't know. You know, I think they say, like, was it 48 hours, or I don't really know what the biologists say, but
yeah, I kind of hear like a 2 or 3 day window is kind of what I've always heard, but I've never seen that, you know, but that's just what I've heard.
I would say if I see a buck with a doe, I'm gonna put 2 days on it. Like, he's gonna be on her for 2 days, you know, and that 2 days might be up right where, you know, when you see them. I don't know, but I just put 2 days on it, and that's what you get. So
yeah, can you imagine if you're on a 5 day out of state hunt and a buck you want to shoot is locked with a doe for 2 days, and he only moves, like, what, a couple hundred yards in 2 days?
Oh, my gosh.
Like, no wonder why you're having a rough hunt, right? Like,
exactly. And you know, that happens a lot to us and we don't even know it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. That's why, like, the more I've done the out-of-state hunting, it's like, I gotta, if it's not going on where I'm at, I gotta go find out where it's going on, because I only got limited time. I gotta find it, and I could be off 500 yards. I could be off five sections. I don't know. So like, that's just like, the more I've done this, instead of riding a, like, don't get me wrong, I'll ride a hole if I see a deer and like, it's, you know, I kind of got a feel for it. But if I'm not seeing what I want to see, I will burn the place to the ground. Like, I'll burn the county to the ground just trying to find them. Right. And that, you'd be smart. You know, you're using the wind when you walk into places, like, you got to be educated when you do it. But like, I feel like my time is better invested that way than just like, hey, this is an awesome funnel, I'm going to sit here for 3 days. Well, I could be a day or two either side of a buck lockdown with a doe that I want to shoot, and you know, not even be in the game at all.
100%. Yeah, you nailed it right there. And I think we ran into that last year when we were in Illinois, when DJ and I went to Illinois. Obviously, he caught that buck in between a doe. Honestly, the one that he ended up killing, because, you know, we didn't see, I think it was lockdown, we didn't see a ton of bucks. Like, in the ones that I did see glassing from the road or going by, the big mature ones that you want to get up, were all lockdown does.
Yep.
All of them. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was a 6-7 day hunt, and the last day I finally got in a pinch, and where, you know, I had six bucks chasing one doe by me, you know, and it was like, well, you can tell. And I probably didn't move enough, to be honest with you, looking at that, going to your point. Like, I hunted the same stand, maybe, like, I'd hunt it in the morning and maybe hunt it in the evening, then move. But I probably should have done more ground, like, get around and walk around and do more scouting or try to find a deer, bedded up with a doe. I probably should have done that more, and I didn't.
Dude, that's, like, when I hunt out of state, one of my favorite things to do is, ideally, I'll get somewhere like midday, like when I arrive to my destination, and I park at a place, grab the backpack, grab the bow, go try to find a place to hunt that night. If I do find something cool, I'll hunt it right away the first thing in the morning, or hunt it that night, depending on what I see. But then when I gotta get down at, like, you know, 11, if I have a bad day, it's like, I got all this other spots, I'm gonna go find them. And you just, like, sneak through the woods with your bow and your backpack full, your saddle and climbing sticks or whatever, and you're just on a little mini adventure. Like, gosh, I love that. I'm always like, man, I wish I could do that in Michigan. I just don't have the real estate to get away with it.
Agree, man. That's what.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, I was just gonna say, like, in Iowa, that was like my goal, is like, if I'm lucky enough to be able to kill something early, like, I want to stay another day or two just so I can drive around in the rut and just see deer and some big deer and see what the biggest deer is I can glass up, and you know what I mean? Like, I think that'd be so much fun.
Oh yeah. Well, you might be dropping people off for Chad in that death trap of his, you know.
Oh God. Yeah. I'm not getting in the bourbon. I'll be driving my truck.
Oh shoot. So is there anything else, like, you're kind of like pumped up for going in the fall? You know, that could be archery equipment, mobile hunting equipment, anything other than Iowa that you're like, I can't wait to try this, or new broadhead, new arrows, or anything new coming out with your partners that you're excited for?
I do have a new arrow partner this year, Kool-Aid Archery. If you guys are, anybody's looking for an arrow, they make some great arrows. I've been shooting them for, what are we in, June right now? I've been shooting them since early April, and just testing them out and everything. Really like those. I actually just did a podcast with them that'll be dropping in a couple weeks, depending on when this drops. But excited for that. There's some gear I can't talk about yet that will be, by the time October hits, people will be, you know what it is. But I'm excited for a particular piece of gear. But honestly, the one thing, if you're like, what are you most hyped up about right now, exiting Iowa, is I have a food plot, a brand new food plot, new architect, never been a food plot in this area. It's a Vitalized Clover Plus. It's got the clover and chicory.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a preset already on one side of it. I've got, on the other side, there's no trees, but there's a couple little pine trees, and I actually tucked like a box blind into it so I can still hunt out of a bow with it, so I can do it multiple winds. I'm really amped about that situation, and that's where the barn buck is. And So that is actually probably my, like, number one hyped thing right now is that food plot and that farm, the way the DNA to that farm. I think the X is where I have the food plot. I honestly, only being on the farm 2 years, this will be my second year, I think that's the only place that you can really successfully hunt this farm, get in and get out and not booger the whole thing. It's not a huge farm, but I'm really pumped about that. So
nice. Now, is the box blind, was that something else you were thinking about? Your kiddo can come with you and hunt?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I love box blinds for that reason. Like, we just build all of ours. Like, we've had them built for a few years. But I've been kind of, like, looking on the market to see what's out there for box blinds and just, like, to kind of add a couple more, you know, to the party. Yep. Just because it won't be long and he's going to be wanting to go hunting, right? And, like, he's going to want to hunt, you know, hunt with a bow, not, you know, he already gun hunts. And I'm like, you know what? Yep. If I invest in a couple more of these box blinds, we can kind of, like, you know, extend his season a little bit. We can, you know, dad can hunt, take the kid, and instead of just having one or two options, if you have three or four, like, you can be pretty lethal with those things.
100%. Yeah, and the blind I have is actually, I've had it for years. It's called a Millennium, you know, the Millennium, like, tree stand company there. So they, years ago, I want to say this was 5 or 6 years ago, they came out with what they called the Buck Hut. And it's on stilts. You put it all together, and then you put, it's like a canvas blind, but it's got bow windows and everything in it. Mm-hmm. And I just have to buy a new canvas for it this year because the canvas has kind of dry rotted over the years. But it's already in a position. I got it, got the front end loader, got it over there, and did it before the comps were in. And it's all, I just got to get the canvas for it, and it's nice and comfortable. It's about, to the base, it's about 9 foot off the ground. So, it should be a good situation where to get Peyton in there with me, and if at the very least, maybe shoot some does on the plot too. So I'm excited about that.
Heck yeah. Now, is the shot, like, did you, like, the max shot distance the plot, like, 50 yards and in, or how did you kind of, like, situate that?
I don't know how far it is across the plot, but if I had to guess, I'm going to say from the blind or the stand, it doesn't matter, like, one side or the other, and I'm going to guess it's going to be about a 45 to 50 yard shot probably. And depending on the situation with the animal and what they're doing, I mean, I will shoot that far. Like, I have confidence shooting that far. So just depends on the situation and what goes on, what state the deer are in, and if I can get a shot off.
Yeah, dude, that's what I've been really doing the last couple of years, is like making these little plots somewhere, you know, in the leftover or whatever it may be. And like, if I'm in a tree, no matter where that may be, depending on the wind or whatever, if he steps out, I can shoot, I can send an arrow. Like, worst case, steps out and doesn't want to come any farther, it's still in a comfortable range. And I've had, I mean, if it's, same goes for does too. Like, when you know those does are in there, it's like, okay, I know that's only 50 yards. And as they work closer and closer, your confidence gains and gains and gains. And yeah, dude, those little plots, they're deadly.
They very much are, and those are my favorite plots. Is the small little, as Bill Weeke would call them, like a hidey hole kill plot or a poor man's plot. Like, that's what I like.
Sweet. So there is some new gear. As if anyone doesn't know, you do help Latitude out. You work for Latitude as well. There is some new gear we got to be on the lookout for going into
this
plot.
Yes, there is.
Exciting. That's exciting. And that leads me to another question. When is Grit going to start launching off again? Because there's some footage out there that I'm dying to see.
Yeah. So we're not doing Grit this year.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding.
I was like, I'm going to cry. Like, what are you
doing? The reason why I said that is because this morning I was listening to you and Brett talk on his podcast, and you specifically brought up Grit that you can't wait until, and I'm like, I'm going to tell him that we're not doing it this year.
Oh, God, dude. Like, I don't know what it is about Grit. Maybe because, like, I know you and I know some of these guys, you know, because we've, you know, listened to our podcast and just being local guys and doing the thing. It's like, dude, I freaking love that series. Like, just something about it. It's just, it's so, like, I don't think of it on any other. I honestly, I'm trying to think right now. There's some people that, like, I'm really, like, excited when they drop a you know, episode or whatever. But last year when you guys were dropping the episodes, it was on Mondays, I believe. Was it Mondays you guys dropped them?
I think so. I can't remember.
So, yeah, because Henry had golf lessons. And I was so excited to, like, bring him to golf because I would just drop him off and then wait in the parking lot. And I'd watch Grit.
That's awesome. Yeah, so the plan right now is that August-September time frame. So we're, like, putting the final touches on it. Like, D-Rock's doing a ton of it right now. Him and I kind of divided and conquered this year. He did some episodes. I did some episodes. We're kind of, like, doing the final touches, you know, right now. But, yeah, that August-September time frame is what we're shooting for right now.
Sweet. It's going to be here quick, man. Like, it's almost July.
I know.
It's almost July. It's crazy.
It's wild.
And then you have all the shenanigans that go on around 4th of July, so you lose a week there, it feels like, and then you're like, oh gosh, then it's like fall plots, and then it's deer season. Dude, we've turned a corner, I feel like. Like, we're turning a corner, yeah. Getting closer to fall.
Don't remind me, because I feel like I don't have everything done.
that's always the case, though. Always.
Yeah.
So, podcast thing, before we kind of end this thing out, where are you at with, is there anything new and exciting that you're doing podcast-wise? I mean, you got any, I guess, anything you're kind of excited, maybe that's a guest that you've had on or trying to have on, and shed some light on that? Because you've been doing this podcast game, and you're getting close to, like, what, 8-9 years?
I never... Season 8 right now. I think I'm doing season 8 right now.
Okay.
I think.
Awesome.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. So, I'm excited for a lot of guests that I have on, and there's a lot of good ones coming up that I've already recorded with. But I will say the most I'm excited most about is the season updates coming from Iowa. So, I don't know if you followed along when DJ and I did the season updates when we were in Kansas, the daily updates, and I did. Yep, I think I lost.
No, you're good. You're there. You're there.
Oh, you can hear me?
Yep. Season updates.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm going through a bad spot right now, so I might lose you. But yes, DJ and I did that. I started the season updates, I think, in 22, and I started basically doing, like, semi-live updates. So if I hunted or did something hunting-related today, I would record that and put it up that day. So it's, like, literally within a couple hours removed of something happening. And when we went to Kansas, we recorded after every day we hunted. Like, when we would drive from the Peace Republic back to the house, we'd record in the truck, I'd get back, I'd edit it, and I'd put it up, and you could listen to it that night or the first thing the next morning. And the buzz that generated from a lot of people equated it to, like, a Netflix binge series. Like, they just couldn't wait till the next morning to drive to work so they could hear what we had did the day before. And I kind of dropped the ball on it a little bit last year, and I really wish I wouldn't have, but this year, I have a really big opportunity to be able to do it when I'm in Iowa, so... the season 25 updates will be live every day from
Dude.
Is what I'm, like, really excited about, because, like I said, the feedback I got from a lot of listeners, they really like that, so I'm super pumped for that.
Dude, I was just thinking, like, how much people probably like it, because maybe they find themselves going to work and they can kind of, you know, hear what's going on with you. And that's, like, no different than, you know, watching a YouTube video, right, during deer's, like, it's November 5th, you can't hunt, so what do you do? You pull up YouTube and you watch someone smoke a giant because you're like, right. I can't do it. Now you can, like, get, like, a real-world update, and then maybe that could help. You know, granted, you're in Iowa, so it's a little different than Michigan, but when you do those, you know, those hunts, like, hey, bucks are with does, or I had great movement today, weather patterns coming in, right, whatever it may be, that might inspire a lot of people to get up and go hunting that next morning, or, you know, pull an all-nighter so they can get somewhere to hunt. I mean, there's a lot of value, I think, in that.
It out right now. I don't know if it's, it could be a flop, it could be something cool, I don't know. But I have something up my sleeve that nobody in the podcast game that I know of has ever done it in the hunting podcast world. So I have something up my sleeve that I'm going to do. I'm going to at least try it once. We'll see what happens. Like I said, it could be a flop or it could be something pretty cool. And I want to be at the forefront of that. So.
Sweet. Well, that's, dude, that's exciting. I mean, you have to, if you've been doing this kind of stuff for a long time, like even for me, I'm you know, getting close to 2 years of doing it, so I don't have near the seat time. But if you lose the spark or lose any of that, like, it's just a slow deterioration of it. Like, if anyone who listens to the Fall podcast, like, week in, week out, they're just bangers, right? So, I mean, that's because you got the creativity and you're super passionate about all the stuff. And that's enough of, you know, tooting your own horn. But let's do a hard pivot here. What is one of the tactics that gets talked about the most in the hunting space that annoys you the most?
Oh, man. That's a good question. Boy.
Like, you know, someone is like, you hear it once again. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm so sick of hearing about this. I'll give you mine. Rut puddles. Rut puddles drive me blind. Like, I get it. Like, I understand the concept, but I feel like they are... It's like one of those things that gets talked about so much, but like, it's like a good scrape. There is so many rut funnels that you could say, this is a rut funnel, I'm sitting here waiting, but like, they're not all created equal. So like, to find the special one takes a lot of factors to go in here. So I feel like it's just one of those basic terms that's thrown out there, but like, no one really breaks down why it's a good rut funnel and all the stuff around it. So I'm always just like, oh my gosh, someone said rut funnel, surprise.
Thank you. One of mine might be like a hub scrape. Like, I feel like I have a picture of what a hub scrape is, but I think people use hub scrape as like a general scrape. You know what I mean? So that kind of somewhat bothers me a little bit. The rut funnel is a good one. I have something else that kind of bothers me, and it's like people talking in absolutes
you can't kill a buck on the morning in early October,
like something like that, or that would be like talking in absolute, like, oh, I've never done that, or I've like, and I get it, that's your experience, if you are talking from your experience, I get it, but like, honestly, I feel like there's so much information out there, and it's like, you just have to take, you have to learn to weed through it. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, like, I used to be that guy that like, just like, listened to everything, and I was like, I'm going to do what X does, and that's going to yield me a big buck, and it never did. And it's like, until I started kind of taking on my approach and how I did it, or like, my windows and my way of doing things, like, that's, I don't even listen to, I don't pick up a lot of things anymore. Like, I just know it works for me, and I do that. And if it doesn't work, then I try to pivot in the moment, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's good. Yeah. I think that's, everyone kind of has to have that. And it might take you a little bit to figure that out. Like, if you're new or trying to like step up your game in any way, you have to kind of like absorb as much as you can, but then you got to figure out your way to, like, what works for you, like what works for your property or what works for, you know, any of that. Okay. If there's one thing about your shot, your archery shot, that you could change at the snap of a finger, what would it be? Mine would be controlling my bow arm. I feel like if I could control my bow arm better, I would be unstoppable, you know, shoot my bow.
Yeah. Mine is to not be a command shooter. Like, I tell the bow when it goes off. And, dude, I've tried and I've shot summers where it's like, just, you know, just pull through it, just let it go. But when I get to the fall, I just deviate right to the command shooting. It's something I cannot break, and it's to the point where it's like, why am I even trying? Like, just hone in on my system and what works for me and just do it. You know what I mean? Why am I trying to change anything? Because it's worked for me, you know. It's never, and now I have missed deer, I've wounded deer. I don't know if that's because I was a command shooter or not. I think my problem when I was doing that sometimes was I was rushing the moments too much. Like, I wasn't slowing the moment down. And but if there's one thing I can change about my form, I think I have great form, I really do. I think me being a command shooter is what I would change way back in the day. Like, when I teach my daughter, you know, I've been teaching her stuff like that, I'm trying not to like teach her too much, but I'm gonna try to teach her how to just like let the surprise release kind of thing.
Interesting. So you think command shooting is a hindrance towards you?
I don't think it's a hindrance, but I think it can be a hindrance, and I think it, what it is, like when you get target panic, I think it amplifies when you're a command shooter.
Okay.
Because you might be moving your boat like up of the target, and when you get there, just let it go. You know what I mean? It's not like that floating pin, and just when the boat goes off, it goes off. Like, it's more of like, right there, you go. You know what I mean? And that's...
I consider myself
going a command shooter. What's that?
I think I'm a command shooter because that boat goes off when I want it to go off.
Yeah.
I've tried a hinge. I cannot do it. I tried it at TAC, and I've shot a lot of guys that use a hinge or use like that surprise shot, and I'm just like, well, I use a thumb button, and I don't slap the trigger or nothing. I squeeze, but like when I activate the shot, I'm ready. Like here, it's going. Like I'm shooting right now.
Yeah.
So like that's how I've always been, and I hate a surprise shot. Like it, like when I surprise shoot something, if I use like someone else's release or a different bow, like a lot of times it'll happen if I'm shooting a buddy's bow, like through paper, if I'm trying to paper tune a bow, it's like I'm not used to it, and then my thumb button will go off before I'm like ready because I'm at a weird draw length or something. It like pisses me off. I'm like, I wasn't ready for that to go off. Like I don't want it to shoot yet. So maybe I'm kind of unique in that way.
Well, yeah, and that's like, I think I have a system. I will say this, I don't like my back muscles. I don't pull through my shot. I pull the bow back, I hold the bow back, but I'm not pulling to make that thing go off.
Yep.
I'm not punching the trigger, but I am, like you said, like a gun. Like you're squeezing the trigger, but I know when it goes, like I know when that thing's gonna go off, you know? And that would probably be something I would change. Other than that, I think I have pretty solid form. I was gonna say something about one thing I did change when I was like in high school. I remember my bows were too long a draw length for me. My arm, with my bow arm, like the one you hold it with, your left arm, because I'm a righty, was straight out, and I have more of a bent arm now, and I really like that. I feel more comfortable with that. So I did change that in the past, and that's helped a lot. But I would change the release probably, and then the other thing is in the moment of truth, I'm gonna say this, follow through. Because follow through, I think, is something that people don't do well enough. Like, I don't think people realize how much your follow through with your shot, like if you don't follow through, can affect your shot. So my rule of thumb is like when I'm shooting in the yard and everything is I'm following through until that arrow, I can hear that arrow hit the target, and then I do a 1/1000 count after I hit the target, and then I'll pull my bow down.
Nice. So yeah, that's just holding your bow up and then staying in your form, not like punch the trigger and instantly do something, or break the shot off or whatever. That's a good that's a good point, because if you try to peek or you try to do something funny, like it's crazy the little, and like the reason why that stuff makes sense to me is when I'm like tuning a bow, like, or tuning an arrow to the bow or broadhead or whatever, the smallest little movement with my rest makes so much of a difference. And I'm like, okay, if my like grip is off or I do something goofy, I can throw that arrow off downrange quite a bit. Like that arrow flight can be manipulated pretty easily, with torquing it or something like that. So yeah, that follow through is very important.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, let's see. You got anything else here? Oh, sport wise, are you done coaching for the year or are you still coaching?
Game, and then I will be done coaching for the summer.
Nice. Nice. You're in the home stretch. And then fall, are you going to coach anything in the fall?
Probably not. She'll start ramping up dance. She's going to actually ramp up her dance this year. Like last year, she only did one class. She's going to be doing multiple classes now. And so she's going to be doing dance all through the fall. And then she's talked about she wants to get into volleyball. And that's just something I'm not. Like, I really don't know a ton about volleyball, so...
It'd be kind of fun to coach, though. It'd be fun to coach, like, not knowing anything about it. All right, yeah. I think Little Man's going to play football this fall. and I'm on the fence if I'm going to coach or not. I think I'm going to assistant coach or help out because I drew my Wyoming General deer tag this yep. year, and I think I'm going to, well, no matter what, if I get the archery tag or the archery license or whatever, that's like the whole month of September. And then the gun season is like the later part of October. So like, no matter what, I'm gonna miss a big chunk of time for that. So I don't really wanna be like the head coach and have to deal with all that. So I'll probably like assistant coach.
Okay, okay, I like that.
Yeah.
Man,
but, dude, I know, it's getting there. I'm like yeah. antsy, I'm antsy for it. So, but hey, dude, I think that's kinda it. I don't really have any other, anything's jumping off the top of my head right now. It's a little different when you're driving. You don't really have like a checklist you can go off of. But,
right.
Most of the time I don't anyways. But no, that was a good conversation, man. Is there anything else you want to touch on?
No, I appreciate you having me on. And, you know, I know we talk all the time and it's like, why don't we just hit record on this thing? But yeah, I appreciate it. I like those questions you're kind of throwing out of left field there for me. It made me think though. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, dude, you got to change it up a little bit, especially in your shoes, right? You're usually the guy asking the questions. So it's kind of fun that you can just let her rip. And you don't have to worry about anything else. So,
100%, man. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyone else who's listening, I mean, Aaron from the Fall Podcast, go check him out. Go on socials and stuff. And go check out Latitude stuff, too. A lot of the videos and all that stuff, Aaron's behind with a team of guys over there. But, yeah, is there any other shout-outs you want to do for your partners or anything?
I mean, anything, any partner-related, you know, Latitude. I've got a, you know, a plethora of other partners and everything. You know, stuff that I trust and they trust me, like, I mean, I wouldn't have it any other way, honestly, and it's not something that just, you know, I just use it's stuff that I believe in and believe in for years. And I mean, you can go to my website fallpodcast.com and check out the list of them, and or listen to the podcast, and there's a lot of codes on there for saving money, you know, on anything you want to get into. And yeah, that's about all I got though, man. I appreciate it.
Awesome. We'll end on that. Thanks everyone for listening to this. Appreciate you getting through some of the hiccups with some of our drop calls or whatever, but I'll do my best to edit it through. And good conversation, man. Appreciate it. Everyone else, make sure you get out there this week. Everyone, see ya.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.